Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Nobody has more respect for women than I do. Nobody.
Hillary Clinton wants to abolish it, believe me. She wants to abolish our Second Amendment.
I think they didn't deny it. I don't think anybody denied it.
Other presidents did not call. They'd write letters, and some presidents didn't do anything.
Many people have come out and said I'm right.
You really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop?
Hello and welcome to Fallacious Trump, the podcast where we use the insane ramblings of MAGA the Hutt to explain logical fallacies. I'm your host, Jim.
And I'm your other host, Mark. A logical fallacy is an error in reasoning that results in bad or invalid arguments. And the logical fallacy we're looking at this week is the appeal to stupidity. Can I just congratulate you on MAGA the Hutt? Why have we not thought of that before?
I don't
That's
know.
That's just
we're
so brilliant.
Six in. Yeah.
MAGA the Hutt is excellent. So good.
So the appeal to stupidity is where someone, while they're making an argument, tries to get either their opponent or the audience to kind of devalue smartness, education, intelligence, intellect, reason, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So that it becomes easier to make a stupid argument, basically.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Because if you say,
you
don't
clear all that stuff out the way.
Don't pay attention to anyone with any knowledge or expertise in this area.
Yeah.
Here's what I think.
Yeah. And that and ironically makes them an expert. You know.
Kind of by default.
Yeah. In the land of the blind, the one-eyed man, and all that. Exactly. So if you can go around and poke all the experts in the eye, and then you can say, come on, everybody, follow me, and then hurtle over the cliff edge, everyone will go with you. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. So our first example comes from an interview that Trump gave to Hugh Hewitt on the radio before he was elected.
Right.
And he was saying how great he was going to be at everything.
Right.
You know, I feel I have a very good grasp. One of them said, wow, you really understand foreign policy and you really understand military policy. A general told me that. He was shocked, actually, if you want to know the truth, because he assumes that I'm, you know, really great at real estate and really good at deals. But I really do have an understanding of that, and I know what to do. And I see what's happening, and I listen to some of our so-called experts on television, and it makes you nauseous to listen to them because they don't know what they're talking about. So, you know, I think it actually could end up, you know, every poll shows that I'm the best on leadership, I'm the best on the economy, I'm the best on the borders, and, you know, and the best on terrorism.
The people that the TV tells you are experts on foreign policy and terrorism and all that kind of stuff, they don't know what they're talking about.
No.
They're idiots.
Yeah.
I know. I have just this natural grasp.
Yeah,
foreign policy. I really understand it.
Like,
I understand
like his natural
policy.
Grasp of, you know, they know I'm already really good at real estate, really good at deals.
That's a given.
Yeah.
They already know that.
Yeah.
But now they're surprised
Some
to find
of them
out
are surprised.
Some
how
amazing
one of them
I
actually
am at everything.
Said, yeah, you're just, cool, you're so good at this. That's why we just thought you were really good at being bankrupt. Yeah, morally and fiscally. Yeah, but no.
It's very much like that time when he said about coronavirus that the doctors said to him, how do you understand this?
Yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, that's
how
right.
You,
yeah, yeah,
how
yeah.
do you know so much about this?
How do you know so much? Well, because we're only getting that secondhand reported through his narcissistic lens that, you know, in his mind, he knows everything about everything.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, these experts actually say, no, you should really not be sticking a very bright light up your ass or imbibing bleach, much less intravenously. Just ignore those. Ignore those people because they are, what do they know? Hey, what do they know? I'm top of the polls when it comes to military and borders and terrorism. Well, yeah, he's certainly been bordering on terrorism for most of his term in office.
Or If we were to assume that any conversation that has involved anyone saying, wow, you really get this, has anything like that has ever happened, yeah, it's because he like pronounced a word right or something and they were surprised that he's that good.
Yeah, yeah.
That was his level, because they assumed he just wouldn't be able to do anything.
Yeah.
So exactly. So the fact that he managed to...
He was able to read Kalashnikov off the page and say it.
On the third try.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as we know from recent video behind-the-scenes footage, he could barely say vote. But, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So once he was in office and had been president for a while, he did a rally where he said this.
If you vote for Biden, he will surrender your jobs to China. He will surrender your future to the virus. He's going to lock down. This guy wants to lock down. He'll listen to the scientists. If I listened totally to the scientists, we would right now have a country that would be in a massive depression instead of, we're like a rocket ship. Take a look at the numbers.
So this was in October of 2020, and you remember how brilliantly the economy was doing in October of 2020.
Oh, man, it was like a rocket ship.
It's like a rocket ship, isn't it? Yeah. You
know, I'm thinking of Apollo 13, maybe, or the Challenger. Yeah, that kind of rocket ship.
It was kind of like a rocket ship that was coming out of a very, very deep hole.
Yeah.
And not quite reaching the surface,
let alone terminal velocity.
Because by October, the economy was utterly fucked.
Yeah.
Like, historically fucked.
Yeah.
And so the way that they do the graphs of, like, GDP growth and stuff like that is comparing it to the previous quarter.
Yeah.
So compared to Q2... In 2020, Q3 was looking amazing.
yeah.
So that is what he was talking about in terms of, you know, how amazingly everything was going.
Well, yeah, it's a bit like Boris and his, we are the highest performing economy in the G7. Well, yeah, in that you're barely above naught. But yeah.
So it wasn't awesome. And if he had listened to the scientist, things, maybe other than the economy, would have been better.
Yeah, look at the numbers. The numbers of the dead people.
Yeah.
And like I hate that bit where he kind of does this. The scientists, like he puts on a virtual white jacket and kind of
he's mocking that Biden would listen to scientists. That's what he's doing.
Rips the piss out of everybody that he doesn't like.
Anyone smarter than him, which is almost everyone.
Everybody, yes, exactly. Which is why he gets on so famously with his wife. Yeah.
So our third example comes from Matt Gaetz. Congressman
he's an expert
for Florida.
Florida man. Yeah.
This was the tweet that we've actually talked about before, where he said, how many of the women rallying against overturning Roe are overeducated, underloved millennials who sadly return from protests to a lonely microwave dinner with their cats and no Bumble matches? Which is quite the tweet.
And quite a question, because the answer, of course, is zero.
I mean, even if it was 100%, that's not an indication that their point is wrong. That their their position on Roe is in any way arguable against.
Yeah, yeah.
If everything he said was true of every single person there.
Yeah.
It's not. But the idea that this group of people is overeducated is a weird take.
And
kind of trashing their intellect, but in the opposite way to how you would normally trash someone's intellect.
Normally
you'd point out how stupid someone is, like say Matt Gaetz or Trump.
But to point out that their point is invalid because they're overeducated.
Smart. too knowledgeable about stuff.
Trouble is they're book smart. People are book smart. You've got no street smarts. You're all book smart.
There is a weird mixture in the GOP because their base is, generally speaking, less well-educated. than the Democrats' base. They have a higher percentage of non-college graduates, even though a large proportion of the actual politicians in the party are very well educated.
Yeah.
They rail against education and they pretend to be stupider than they are.
Yeah.
And they pretend
Wow, that's something. Yeah, if Matt Gaetz was to pretend to be more stupid than he is.
I mean,
yeah.
For some of them, it's the only explanation because you can't actually be as stupid as Louis Gohmert appears to be.
No.
That's not. Like, he wouldn't be able to get to the Capitol.
He wouldn't be able to tie his shoes. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So the fact he doesn't fall down more suggests he actually is more intelligent than he comes across.
He's cracked the old upright bipedal thing. Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of them are proper, you know, lawyers and you know,
college graduates.
Ted Cruz is Harvard educated.
Yeah.
Senator John Kennedy is I mean, he comes across as this kind of foghorn, leghorn, bumpkin, weird guy. But
I think it's the way he says buy it. I say buy it every time he starts a tweet. Yeah.
But it seems to be an affectation to appear more accessible to people who view those East Coast elite intellectuals as bad guys.
And now is the time, I think, for Mark's British Politics Corner.
We're back in the gove that keeps on goving. It's the let's travel back to June the 3rd, 2016, when Sky News's Faisal Islam interviewed Michael Gove about the Leave the EU campaign.
The leaders of the US, India, China, Australia, every single one of our allies, the Bank of England, the IFS, the IMF, the CBI, five former NATO Secretary Generals, the chief exec of the NHS, and most of the leaders of the trade unions in Britain all say that you, Boris, and Nigel are wrong. Why should the public trust you over them?
I'm not asking the public to trust me. I'm asking the public to trust themselves. I think the people in this country have had enough of experts with organisations from acronyms
saying... The people of this country have had enough of experts.
From organisations with acronyms saying that they know what is best and getting it consistently wrong.
This country
because
have
these
had
people,
of experts.
Those who are arguing that we should remain, have a vested financial interest.
Ah, right. So,
in the
so are they lying?
The
are
Union.
They stupid? Or is there a conspiracy? There's a conspiracy.
No, I'm pointing out that the majority of people in this country are suffering as a result of our membership of the European Union. Their wages are lower.
The majority of people. Yes, the majority of people.
Their wages are lower.
33 million people.
Access to public services is restricted.
What's your factual basis for that claim that 33 million people are suffering from EU membership?
Well, we can
complain about the other side's figures. What's your factual basis to say the majority of people in this country are suffering from EU membership?
Well, I know myself. I know myself from my own background.
So the thing about the appeal to stupidity is it actually says, you know, forget about what the people who know about this stuff think. Forget all that. How do you feel about it? What do you feel about it? Because that's the important thing. You know, there's all these people where it's just this hastily made up thing about which he can't even say properly. You know, I think people are fed up with listening to people from organisations.
Experts from organisations with acronyms.
Yeah, well, it was except he said, you know, experts with organisations from acronyms. So that doesn't include Australia, India, China, you know, all the heads of state. You know, ironically, all of those countries that the UK is desperate now to do trade deals with because we left the EU and now the trade deals that were brokered by the EU with those countries are all gone and we have to forge our own. So the very people that we're now desperately trying to do deals with were saying, what the fuck are you doing? Just stay where you are, you idiots. And and also he kind of goes, oh yeah, well, those experts who are with companies from acronyms, there's a vested interest in those who remain. They're all doing very well from the EU. They go, yeah, but what about the vested interests of the people that voted leave, that want you to vote leave? Gove, for instance, Rees-Mogg, all of the people with offshore banking arrangements that the EU is about to clamp down on. which if you leave the EU, then you're no longer subject to. And then, of course, he's dismissed these experts in favour of people themselves, and then goes on to place himself in the role of expert by making up stuff about the majority of people's lives being ruined by the EU. And then when pressed, he goes, well, I my own personal experience. I go, oh, OK, so what we've got to do is dismiss all of these people that work for companies with acronyms and Australia and India and China and anywhere else. And just listen to you, because you know of one person whose life was ruined by the EU, according to you.
Yeah, and it's, which is a lie.
Which is a lie, yeah.
Because his dad has come out and said, no, none of that is true.
Nothing to do with that, yeah. So, he pulls on the heartstrings of Aberdonian fisher folk. Kind of goes, yeah, EU ruined with the fishing quotas. And also, if in doubt, just invoke the fish. That's right. Yeah, so long. Thanks for all the fish. It's that whenever there's a problem, then it's always about the fishing quotas. So, second example, let's fast forward 6 years, and Faisal Islam is now asking a question of Rishi Sunak in the Tory leadership debate, which is between the last two candidates, Rishi Sunak and Liz Truss. Now, remember, Rishi Sunak was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the guy what looks after the money. He was the expert turned to when COVID hit, and he came up with a plan for furloughing people out of work. So rather than just lay everybody off, you just continue to pay the wages. The government would pay the wages for them. And he subsequently wanted to raise national insurance to pay for that, which wasn't a popular move. It was a stealth tax, actually. It wasn't a popular move, but it was one at the time that Boris and the school of Boris backed. But the problem was that Rishi was the first big gun to resign, which started the avalanche of resignations that led to the downfall, hashtag clownfall, of Boris. So he's gone out of favour with the school of Boris and their star pupil, Liz Truss. So here's Rishi's answers to Faisal's question, and then listen out to Liz's right-wing schooled response.
For Rishi Sunak, can you name a single G7 country that's raising taxes in the current situation?
What I can ensure is that our borrowing and debt is falling, and our borrowing and debt is falling like other G7 countries, because we have decided to put a lot of money into the NHS, Faisal, because it's everyone here's number one public service priority. And unlike other G7 countries, we fund our NHS through taxation. And if we want to get the backlogs down, if we want to support all the NHS workers that I'm sure are in the audience tonight, I thought it was the right and responsible thing to do to get the funding into the NHS. So that's what I did. But because I also think it's not moral. It's not moral to ask our children to pick up the tab for the bills that we're not prepared to pay. It's not a conservative thing to do, because if we're not for sound money, what is the point in the Conservative Party? It's the most conservative of conservative values, and that's what I stand for.
The answer is that countries like the US, Canada and Japan all have higher levels of debt than the UK, but they are not following the policies that will lead to a recession.
You just mentioned three countries. Do you know what mortgage rates are in the US at the moment? Do you want to use them as an example? Their mortgage rates are almost 50% higher than mortgage rates in this country because they're borrowing so much.
Canada actually has project fear.
So there's Liz Truss's just ditching off, don't listen to this expert, in the same way that Gove went on to invent the phrase project fear, as did Jacob Rees-Mogg. So she's just reverting to, she wants to bring about tax cuts. Rishi Sunak is kind of going, yeah, if you do that, let's not have tax cuts, because if you do, how are you going to fund those? And if you don't put taxes up to pay for the thing that we've just spent lots of money on, then we're going to be handing that on for generations to come. We're going to have to spend the country's credit card on those things, and we haven't got sufficient growth because of fucking Brexit, which nobody mentioned. There's not sufficient growth and predicted growth for the coming year for the UK because Brexit is still down, even post-COVID. Everybody, all of the European economies are predicted to have their growth to go up to reclaim where they were pre-COVID, except for the UK. cause Brexit. So
that was a weirdly panicky answer from Liz, wasn't it? When Rishi's like, okay, well, you've just said a possible solution.
Yeah.
Here's the actual data on why that wouldn't work. And she's going, scaremongering.
Yeah. Project Fear. And the thing about Project Fear, right, is it turned out to be true.
Yeah,
it's all absolutely true. You know, even Aiknob Reed Smug has recently admitted he was completely wrong about the huge delays building up at Dover as a result of leaving the customs union, which was a Project Fear prediction. So to dismiss Rishi's expertise is one thing, but then to use a discredited smear to do so is completely stupid. Also, note that subsequently Rishi's expertise was further trashed on Twitter and in the right-wing press when he was accused by Camp Truss of mansplaining economics to Truss. He was very aggressive, and he just mansplained all this stuff. The thing about what mansplaining is that the people that the women, I guess, that you're mansplaining to, people who aren't men, that you're explaining this stuff to in a man kind of way, they already know it. That's the thing about mansplaining, is that they already know it, and yet you're telling them, because you're a man and they are a woman, that they're wrong and they need to understand what feminism is or something like that.
Yeah, and, yeah, let me interrupt your expertise with my confidence.
Yes, exactly, yeah. And the thing is, she doesn't know this stuff.
No.
And she does need telling. She's basically, it's all playing to the gallery of voters. She's promoting £40 billion of unfunded tax cuts. She's planning to increase borrowing to pay for the tax cuts to appease the electorate that gets to choose the leader. So she doesn't know what she's doing. She's never been an economist. None of her roles in office have involved money. She's never actually been anything. Except Rishi mansplains that she was a Remainer.
Liz, I remember the referendum campaign. I remember the referendum campaign, and there were only one of us who was on the side of Remain and Project Fear, and it was you, not me.
If you're having a discussion with an accountant, he's going to bring the receipts. That's the thing. So he kind of points out the one person who knows what Project Fear is the one person in the Tory party who was a Remainer and was on the side of supposed Project Fear. She was the one that pointed out all the shortcomings of it. And she's gone, Project Fear, blah, blah, blah. So actually what's happened is she's been schooled by the likes of Rees-Mogg and Nadine Dorries. She is the Boris continuity candidate. She's the right-wing puppet. Thing is, she's so stupid, she doesn't know that. All she wants is, just like Boris, she just wants she's lured by the click of the limousine door. She wants to be in charge. That she's going, fucking hell, me, a complete non-entity who doesn't know what to do with my arms when I'm standing still, can finally be...
Or her face.
Or her face. Or voice, or anything that comes out of her mouth. Yeah, but she has a fabulous dressing up box, and it's, you know, it's all from Thatcher's wardrobe, which would look great in number 10, because that's where they came from. Yeah, she's bought them all. Yeah. Meanwhile, Labour campaign coordinator Shabana Mahmood, I expect, is somewhat relishing the sense that, and I quote, these two continuity candidates gave their now familiar chorus of unfunded spending promises, bitter attacks, and a trashing of the Tories' 12 years in government. That's the whole thing. When you watch these debates, they're all kind of going, well, yeah, I remember growing up in the 80s. It was a fucking austerity. It was a recession. Yeah, no, who was in charge in the 80s? Mm. Oh, yeah, you lot. Yeah, yeah. And yeah, it's all been awful the past 12 years. we need to bring about tax cuts.
It's very much I'm the only one who can save us from the wreck that my party has made of the country.
Yeah,
over the last
and decade. I had a massive part in. Yeah. And people are falling for it because it's, you know, get rid of the expertise. Let's just go with how you feel, because that's the important thing.
You're no support for us. The million lies you're selling us never gets discussed. And what you want will kill us all. Don't believe in tax. You're lying like a child. Don't believe in that are in the Nile. Stupid girl, stupid girl, all we have you're wasting, all we have you're wasting.
Garbage there, of course, with Stupid Girl.
So in The Fallacy in the Wild, we like to talk about the fallacy of the week from a non-political perspective. Our first example is 12 Angry Men.
Right.
Which we've used a couple of times before.
Mm. How come you changed your vote?
Well, it just seemed to me there was room for doubt.
You haven't got a leg to stand on, you know that, I hope.
Oh, I don't feel that way. There were a lot of details that never came out.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Oh, come on. You're like everybody else. You think too much, you get mixed up.
Yep.
So, yeah, one of the people who remains sceptical of the innocence of the
bloody Remainers
for a while, one of the last ones to come round, he's accusing the person who has changed his mind of thinking too much. And,
right.
Because he kind of immediately had a gut reaction to the guilt of this person.
Yeah.
And feels like, that's fine. You shouldn't think about it.
No.
And... Use intellect and consider the evidence.
be swayed by details. Yeah, overthinking the whole thing. Well, yeah, that's kind of what you're asked to do when you're in a jury. You know, angry or otherwise, you just got to go, well, let's just consider the facts, devoid of how we feel about it, devoid of our experience of having been through similar situations. You've just got to take it on its merits. So that's the point of that film.
So our second example is from Miami Vice.
Yay!
The TV show, not the film.
The heretical film. And we're experts on it, you know. It's not how we feel about it, but we're experts.
This is the opening of an episode and presumably a drug dealer, a bad guy, who Sonny Crockett is doing some undercover work, kind of working for, comes up to Sonny and says this.
Damn, kid, it must be wonderful to be young and to know everything.
You want to translate that, Mr. Carrera?
Miguel, he does not realize that we are at war. Until Gato makes a move, everything must wait, even business.
Well, the kid's not exactly your seasoned combat vet now, is he, Mr. C? Neither's that chump counselor, Sugarman.
They know nothing, even with all their fancy degrees. Not like me and you, huh, Burnett? To the school of...
Hard Knocks.
Hard Knocks!
The school of Hard Knocks, that set us up for this, like, being good at this stuff. Better than their fancy degrees that they've got, my son and his lawyer.
It's a book smart versus street smart.
Absolutely. Yeah. If Sonny Crockett had street smarts that would be required of a vice cop, surely,
he wouldn't roll his bloody sleeves up on his jacket, for one thing.
Nothing wrong with that. But but he wouldn't, in a probably reasonably small drug dealing community in Miami mm-hmm. spend mm-hmm. 5 years using the same undercover name, Sonny Burnett. When Sonny Burnett continually turns out to be a cop, you should stop using that name when you're going undercover.
And breaking all the cartels. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because word would possibly get around, or maybe he's just banking on the fact that the street smart people won't have heard of that. I'm closing one eye and opening the other and raising an eyebrow as I say that. But yeah, you've just ruined the entirety of Miami Vice now. Yeah.
So there's a lot of this kind of idea that, oh, these college people, they're their fancy degrees. They don't know what's really going on in the world. They only know what they've been educated in. They only know that stuff. It's a kind of ivory tower kind of situation.
We know
what's really going on. We're good at life.
Yeah.
So our final example in this section comes from the worst Superman film.
Oh, my God.
I don't think there's any debate in that. Superman 4's Quest
for Peace.
You don't
have to be an expert on that at all. Superman 4, absolute shite.
In this sequence, Superman has been wrestling with a moral dilemma because the US and Russia are kind of gearing up for nuclear war, kind of. They're just building up their nuclear weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
And Superman, who all of a sudden seems to have some kind of prime directive where he's not allowed to interfere in human affairs.
Despite the fact that he reversed the rotation of the fucking planet in episode 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By 4, he's decided, maybe I shouldn't get involved.
That's because he'd been watching Star Trek reruns.
He's morally conflicted about whether he should intervene.
Yeah.
But Lois helps him out, kind of.
How about you? Are you still down?
Nope. Things are pretty clear, really.
Good. Too much thinking wears down your batteries. Clark, you gotta go with your gut.
Go with your gut. Which, when what you're trying to think about is a moral issue, isn't necessarily that terrible a piece of advice. But this kind of represents the idea that you should go with your gut, where actually there is evidence to consider, or there is.
It's kind of flying in the face of the entirety of my experience of philosophy that I studied for 3 years. When you're talking about a moral dilemma, maybe it's quite good advice to just go with your gut. Okay, well,
we're talking about a Superman here.
Oh, okay, right, yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Whether it's good advice or not, if you're not Superman, if the thing you're trying to consider is a thing where there is some evidence or a thing where thinking about it would be useful, going with your gut is not a logical, rational way to approach a decision or choosing whether an argument is a good one or not.
Granted.
So we're gonna play
fake news, folks. I love the game. It's a great game.
I understand the game as well as anybody.
Yes, it's time for Fake News, the game where I read out 3 Trump quotes, 2 of which are real and 1 I made up, and Mark has to figure out which one is fake news.
You see, now, these so-called expert players of the game who write in at the rate of maybe 1 a year and say where you're going wrong, Mark, is overthinking it. You should just go with your gut.
Yeah.
That's just go with your gut. Don't listen to a word Jim's saying, just choose the one. And I kind of say to them, that's just stupid. You've got to think about these things and then ultimately go with your gut and then get duped by
I think going Jim. With your gut is largely your technique in this, isn't it?
Well, so-called experts told me that that's what you should do. And I kind of do that. And it's as we can see, I'm 46 out of 95. So much of the time, not most of the time, but much of the time, it has paid off.
Uh-huh.
Other times when I've not done that, it's not paid off. So, call yourself experts. You bloody do it each time. Yeah. Yeah. So. Get to this point. Get to this point in the show. Don't fast forward. You work it out. Pause. Pause. Work it out and then start playing.
Yeah,
and,
commit. Commit to an
commit,
answer.
Commit. And then laugh at me. Yeah. Not before. Just then. Yeah.
So.
Right. Sorry about that, dear listeners.
The theme this week is a little bit different because Trump's Twitter clone, Truth Social, is now available to UK consumers.
Oh,
which means I'm now on Truth Social.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm at Fallacious Trump. If anyone is on Truth Social, I've yet to be banned. So that's
brilliant.
That's good.
You've not tried hard enough.
I haven't tried very hard. I've only been on it like 4 days.
Fantastic. Yeah. But,
so these are truths, which is the most ironic name for things Trump says. But these are posts that Trump has made.
Is that the equivalent of a tweet?
Truth. Yes.
Oh, okay. You, a truth.
You,
right.
You truth and you retruth.
Nice.
Because it's basically. It's exactly Twitter, but any time they say Twitter, you say truth.
Truth. Okay. You say Twitter, you say truth.
They
Twitter,
can't truth, be bothered Twitter, to do truth. Anything else. They have not made any effort at all to distinguish it in any way from Twitter, except for just giving it a slightly different name that starts with the same
letter. Does a small blue bird look like a black
It's
hoodie.
A T.
Oh,
it's
okay.
It's a T, I believe they had to change the
logo. Yes, exactly, because
they
were
used
being...
a trucking company.
Yes,
logo.
Exactly that, yeah. Well, I think it was a UK trucking firm at that, yeah. It's not a British Telecom or anything like that, yeah. So it's not a mockingbird or anything, or a vulture. It should be, wouldn't it? If they've got any sense of, no, we're talking about the right wing.
Yeah,
scratch that.
Okay. So.
Okay, give me the truth. I've got on the back of my laptop, right?
Uh-huh.
I've got a sticker from when I bought the 50th anniversary of John Lennon's Plastic Ono Band album. Came with the sticker, "Give me some truth," and I've got it on the back. I didn't realise until now. This is what he's been talking about.
This is what
about.
It was about. Yeah. So, truth number one.
Yeah.
Who would even imagine that the DOJ, that's in quotes, or rather the Deep State Justice Department, would be listening...
DSJD, right.
Would be listening to testimony from a debunked social climbing scam artist wannabe media pundit who lied to the Unselect Committee about ketchup and other made-up stories. She doesn't know me, and I don't know her. She...
You don't know me!
She lost it when I told her she couldn't come work for me in Florida.
That is excellent, isn't it? Social climbing scam artist, wannabe media pundit who lied to the Unselect about ketchup and other made-up stories. My next novel is going to be called Ketchup and Other Made-Up Stories. Okay.
Truth number two.
Yeah, truth number two, yeah.
Joe Biden's second bout of COVID, sometimes referred to as the China virus, was sadly misdiagnosed by his doctors. He instead has dementia, but is happily recovering well. Joe is thinking of moving part-time to one of those beautiful Wisconsin nursing homes where almost 100% of the residents, miraculously, and for the first time in history, had the strength and energy to vote, even if those votes were cast illegally. Get well soon, Joe.
That's a proper mélange of things, isn't it? Oh, my God. It's like Golden Girls and the China virus. Okay.
Truth number three.
Yep.
Remember during the campaign, I would say with great conviction that if these people get into office, we would end up being, quote, Venezuela on steroids. Guess what? Another one of many Trump predictions that is true or turning out to be true. Trump was right about everything, as the now well-known phrase, bracket, chant, goes.
Another one of his well-known phrases that nobody uses. Yeah. I really quite like DOJ or the DSJD. Yeah, and the scam artist, wannabe media pundit. Okay, dementia covering world, beautiful Wisconsin. Well, we know about the old voters that got, but they complained about they gave them the vote. And you go, well, yeah, but that's what you, even if you're 103, you still get the vote. Okay, Venezuela on steroids. Right, well, according to my experts, who I'm going to ignore, and on the basis they don't know nothing, I think that, you kind of go, how many greatest hits are there in there before you suspect that it's fiction, is the problem with Trump. So I think number two is the one that you made up.
Okay. So of the other two, which are you more convinced by?
Mainly because I like social climbing scam artists, wannabe media pundit. Number one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, I don't have audio clips of these because they are...
No.
They are written down.
Truths. They are truths, yeah.
And but number one...
Yeah.
Is...
Is...
Fake news.
Oh, man! Oh, wow.
That was the one I made up.
That's very, very good. In that case, I hope you posted that. See, I think that's... Oh, I've just worked... Yes, that's what you should be doing on Truth Central. It's just posting... Parody Trumps. Just whack them up. Don't even say you're a parody Trump. Just put them out there. Just put them out and see what happens. People go, yeah, right on, sister. Or fallacious. Oh, we got, oh my God. That is excellent. But that was
thing.
So convincing. It was the ketchup and all the major stories. Wow.
He did call Cassidy Hutchinson a scam artist. That's the extent to
that,
which.
But that, yeah.
It was based on reality. Trick there. Yeah. Reality? Based on Trump. So.
Yeah. But it's, you know, but other, in all other senses, it's true. It is a truth.
Yes.
It except is, you made it.
It is
yeah.
a truth I made up.
Except it's the truth that you made up rather than everybody else.
Yeah.
No.
Whereas so the other two are truths.
So that
he made up. Yeah.
So that the whole, no way, the whole bloody greatest hits thing of China virus, dementia, Wisconsin voting when you're, no.
That was the thing that when I saw it, I thought, Jesus Christ, I have to see if truth is available yet. Because I've been checking intermittently. But when I saw that, I was like, oh, I've got to get on Truth Social.
I've got to go. I've got to be part of this. Yeah.
Because, yeah. That's
well, this is it. We found the perfect outlet for that. If that stuff is coming up as a truth.
That's a former president of the United States.
Who's just written doing that, a who is mashup saying, of everything, isn't it?
Joe has dementia. He had the
and
China
the
virus.
Old people in nursing homes were given the vote.
Yeah.
They voted illegally. Wow. Wow.
Yeah, the Wisconsin Jesus nursing homes Christ. Thing, incidentally, is a reference to a part of the convicted felon Dinesh D'Souza documentary. 2,000 Mules.
Exactly. That's what misled me.
Yeah. Yes. Which we have been covering in the last five patron specials.
Dissecting, I think. You know, enjoying, maybe not, but yeah. Yeah.
This coming week will be the last of those that where we cover 2,000
So
Mules.
You say.
No, we're definitely going to get it done. Definitely okay. Not binding.
Which is number six. Yeah.
And yeah, that is actually part of what we'll be talking about in the next one. Which was a former Wisconsin Supreme Court justice called Gableman, I forget his first name, who did a study where he looked at voter turnout in Wisconsin nursing homes and then just lied about the numbers and claimed that there were like 34 nursing homes where 100% of the residents, even people who were, you know, incompetent legally,
yeah,
or basically
had,
in
had
a
all
coma
voted
or whatever, yeah, had voted. And
yeah,
and when journalists looked into
in
it
the real world,
to try and
yeah
verify any
yeah
of it, they yeah they found there was one place where 100% of people had voted, and it was a single nursing home where there were like 12 residents. And
yeah,
it wasn't unusual. And the numbers, the percentage of people in Wisconsin nursing homes who voted in 2020 was not significantly different from previous years.
No.
So, but
no,
we'll get into that more in our Patreon bonus.
Yeah.
So if you,
yeah, nip over to
if
there.
If you're interested yeah in a ridiculously detailed breakdown.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Yeah. Of 2,000 mules and mm why almost everything they say is a lie. Then
yeah
check out patreon.com/ftrump.
Yeah.
Meanwhile. Truth number three,
yeah,
Venezuela on steroids. That was also a real truth that Trump wrote.
He still continues to talk about himself in the third person.
Yeah. And he claims
as the now well known phrase
that
goes,
Trump was right about everything is a well known phrase or even chant. Who the fuck is chanting Trump was right about everything?
But it doesn't even Trump was right about everything.
Yeah, it's
you
not like build the wall. Build the
no,
wall. Trump was not, right about everything.
About everything.
What was Trump
right
about?
Everything. Yeah, that'd be easy to do. Trump was right about everything.
What was Trump?
Even
he was right.
Too
what
many
was he right about? Everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Trump was right about everything. It's just,
yeah, no, it's
doesn't
awkward,
scan.
Isn't it?
It's just not. It's not chantable yeah stuff, is it? He can't. He'd never be able to write an anthemic tune, would he? He kind of go, yeah. Okay, what's your chorus then, Donald?
Yeah.
Trump was right about everything. No, no. You see, we've got to work back from the chorus. What we need is a really catchy chorus that people will just join in. Yeah, it needs to be a hook.
Get
words
Cap'n
or
and Messiah
less
on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but, yes. Quite. Trump was right about everything. The well-known chant goes.
So, unfortunately,
over
that means you are still further.
Yeah,
from
you see. Yeah, you see.
The chance.
So-called experts. You so-called experts. Go with your gut.
Yeah.
No. See, yes, what you've got to do is study Jim over a period of years and still fall for everything he does. Yeah.
So you're now on 46 out of
96,
which means that
I can't
in order to get
it
50 out of 100, you can still do it.
If I get all four
you
right.
You just need a perfect score over the next 4 weeks,
okay,
which I don't think is unprecedented. I think you have had a run of four.
I have.
Correct
yeah
answers
yeah
before.
And you know why that is?
So,
it's because I've ignored the bloody experts each time.
So you never know.
Yeah.
It's still possible. So now it's time for the part of the show that this week at least is called the public hearing season finale was not a logical fallacy. Because
yeah,
as we were recording last time,
I know
they did the last of the first season
yeah
of public
yeah
hearings. There's more
yeah
to come.
They
trailed
that.
They
really nicely sneaked
they'd,
that in, didn't they?
They'd leaked it, but yes,
yeah,
they,
yeah,
it did come out at the end that there are going to be more because they're getting such a lot of people coming forward with actual evidence and
yeah
more
yeah
people
yeah, yeah
to talk to and more things to talk about and stuff like that. So that is.
So the thing is, it was on when we were recording. Did you
yeah
then stay up and watch it?
Absolutely not. No.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh,
no.
Yeah. So afterwards, I kind of like, we must have finished, well, 3 a.m. my time where we
yeah
recorded last time. I then sat and watched the bloody thing. Yeah. And oh, my God, it was so exciting.
Yeah, it is great.
Yeah.
But
yeah
no, I had to catch up on YouTube.
All right. Yeah.
But it has been throughout very interesting, very exciting and well put together
yeah
as a whole. And the kind of evidence they're getting is going to be very useful to the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
The one thing that the fact that they've announced that there's going to be more in September
yeah
means that you probably won't see any indictments from the Department of Justice based on this stuff until
right
they've kind of basically announced, okay, we're done, that's all the evidence we're gathering.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Well, they're going to release at some point a report. that will detail all of the stuff that they have uncovered and put it in the same way as the Mueller report did.
Yeah, yeah.
But hopefully in a more open to prosecution kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess, but also the environment has moved on.
Yeah.
So that people who are, well, not least the presenters of,
yeah,
you know, episode six. What were we on? Episode six?
Eight. This is eight.
Eight, yeah, yeah. Were former Trump acolytes. You know, that, mm-hmm, even they're kind of like fed up with it. So that in the environment that the Mueller report came out in, there were many people who were willing to just dismiss what the experts said. They go, well, yeah, but we feel he's all right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, they would apply the fallacy du jour. And, yeah. Because the other interesting thing is that one of the comments I saw about the results of the work that they've done so far, and particularly this episode, is that there's clear legal peril.
Yes.
Severe legal peril. That was the phrase.
I mean, they've been fairly Trump. Careful to use on multiple occasions the specific language of, for example, the seditious conspiracy statute and things like that.
Yeah.
Jamie Raskin in, I forget which one, probably five or six, was talking about obstructing or impeding official proceedings and using the actual specific language of the law to make it, I think, as clear as it could possibly be that what we're arguing here is that this law was broken by these people who we're talking about in this context. And here's the evidence, and here's the testimony, and here's all of the things we can lay out for you. Merrick Garland has already said that his attorneys in the DOJ are looking at these hearings and kind of paying attention.
Yeah.
And they have already started talking to and subpoenaing people who have given evidence at these hearings. But this has laid out everything that happened in a fair amount of detail and with a fair amount of context. And it's one of those things where it feels as a, you know, lefty that that if you watch this thing and pay attention, it would be hard to still believe everything was fine. Everything was, you know, on the level. And Trump didn't have any part in January 6th.
Yeah, into the self-evidently trap.
It feels kind of like the diametric opposite of the right-wingers who watch 2,000 Mules and say, well, if you watch 2,000 Mules and don't believe that there was fraud, you're in denial, you're fooling yourself, you're an idiot.
Also, if you watch 2,000 Mules and don't look into any of the details.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas this is the, yes, exactly, it's the diametric opposite of this, where you go, here are all the details.
Yeah, that's the thing. Because 2,000 Mules, as we've talked about at great length, does not back up their enormous argument.
It's not a great film. Our
analysis of it, obviously, is great.
Oh my god, it's so good.
They don't back up their argument. They have the testimony, for want of a better word, that they have is from anonymous people or people who we know are not trustworthy. And the evidence they present, they don't provide
the actual
evidence itself, or sources, or anything that's convincing.
But they kind of say, have you got more? Oh yeah, we've definitely got it.
That's all we need to know. whereas this series of hearings, they've provided plenty of evidence. They have shown you where that evidence comes from. They've provided their sources. They have then talked to, you know, they've shown video testimony from, in some cases, those sources, or audio clips of, for example, the kind of radio communication that was going on between DC police on the day And
that's quite chilling, actually.
The Secret Service stuff that came out this time in this hearing was essentially a witness saying that the Secret Service, Pence's detail particularly, were kind of basically making end-of-life calls to their families and saying goodbye because they thought, this is a bad situation.
It's in a bad place
right now. We
may
not make it home today.
Yeah.
And those agents, they sign on knowing that they are kind of risking their lives. They are prepared to lay down their lives for the person they're protecting, but not usually in this situation.
Yeah, yeah. Not you know, in their own place of work.
Yeah. From like the guy's line manager, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
His immediate boss is the one endangering his life. Yeah. And
it was amazing because they kind of, and that they got choked up in the retelling of it, because I think that was part of the realization. It's almost like talking to or hearing the testimony from a Vietnam vet when they would suddenly realize that they were out there and exposed to near-death experiences, which they were trained to deal with, but there it was. Oh my God, suddenly it was there, and my best friend fell and was gone. And I had to deal with that, and I had to kind of get out. And it was, you know, the same with those kind of wartime stories, but America's only so old, so it's only taken part in so many wars.
Quite a few, over how old it is. It's managed to pack them in.
Yes. So it was a familiar wartime kind of testimony, and which caught out the person in their testimonial. It their emotion caught up with them. They suddenly realised how dire the experience was. And I was taken back to there's an excellent BBC documentary called 6 Hours at the Capitol or something like that. And it's probably still on BBC.com. And you realise the intensity of the experience they were going through when they were, particularly there was some bit where the Capitol building police are just holding this corridor against an influx of, it's like, you know, 300. It's like Sparta holding this thing up, and you can see the PTSD happening right there, and the people who are recounting these tales, their voices catch in the same way as the testimony we heard about the guy talking about why he wrote in the log, I think it's very bad for the service right now, and that's, you know, that's kind of very understated speak.
It was understated, wasn't it, because I thought it was a little bit of an odd question of why, because it seems reasonable when this shit is happening for someone to note down that it's happening. It seems like that's the, if what goes in the log, if it isn't that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If Secret Service agents are calling their families to say goodbye because they don't think they're going to make it home that day, because they think that an insurgent force is probably going to kill them.
Yeah.
If that doesn't make it into the log of what happens to the Secret Service that day, what's the log for?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so when he was asked, you know, why did you feel this was necessary to go into the official log, he was a bad situation.
Yeah,
it was
a situation where death in the face.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They were saying it was a situation where there were. it looked like there was going to have to be lethal force or worse.
Or I know. And what is worse than lethal force?
Well,
that was
the thing that's worse. If you're a security detail for the vice president, the thing that's worse than using lethal force to protect the vice president is the vice president being killed.
Yeah. And then they put the radio, the kind of walkie-talkie conversations over this footage. So there's people at the top of the stairs, and then the insurrectionists come into the building, and they're saying, okay, we've got people in the building. Is the path... No, we need to go now. If we're going to get him to the secure place, we need to go now.
Yeah, if we don't leave now, we might not have a chance to
get out of here. And you suddenly realise it's that close. It's like 5 seconds and six steps down the staircase. Mm-hmm. You know,
you just need to look at the footage of Eugene Goodman, the officer guiding the insurrectionists away from the Senate chamber.
Oh my God! Yeah,
to know they know how close they got and how important his role was.
Yeah,
in that kind of stuff. Yeah,
when I saw watched that on the BBC documentary, at that point I had tears. It's that point when your eyes go hot and tears come out, and you think, whoa, he knew exactly what he was doing, because he knew where everybody was behind him. You know, these mad people with fucking nails through a baseball bat kind of people. They're trying to kill Pelosi and hang Pence, and he's just staring them down and moving them one way to give the whole of the gathered lawmakers a chance to escape. God, it's amazing. Yeah.
So the focus of this hearing was the 187 minutes that Trump didn't act.
Yeah.
And what he was doing at the time, which initially
was nothing. Yeah.
Well,
watching
it
the
seemed
telly,
to be nothing. Yeah.
Clapping his
initially,
hands.
I thought, well, he just watched telly. He just watched it unfold and didn't do anything. But it's worse than that. As the witness Sarah Matthews phrased it, he was adding fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
He was calling representatives, congresspeople and senators, to get them to continue to object to the count. People like Tommy Tuberville were answering calls from him and saying, yeah, we can't object. There's nothing happening at the moment because we're being attacked.
Yes. Yeah.
We're currently running away from the people you sent here.
Yeah.
Also, I need to hang up now because they're trying to kill us.
Yeah.
But he just was, that's what he was doing. That's what his focus was on.
Yeah.
Not protecting anyone or doing his job at all.
Yeah.
But on everything is going to plan.
Yeah.
Meanwhile,
just keep it up.
Yeah.
Why aren't you keep objecting, demanding this, that, and the other? Yes. Yeah. They make the case for, well, of course he's not going to do anything because the rioters, the insurrectionists, are doing exactly what he planned. Yeah. You know, they are interrupting and preventing the ratification of the votes. That's you know, it's purely a ceremonial thing. He's lost the fucking election months before, and it's just they're reading out the thing, and he's trying to prevent that. He's actively interfering in the lawful transfer of power. That he's doing what the West accuses the likes of Robert Mugabe of doing, you know, it's interfering and you know, South American socialist governments are accused of doing exactly what he's doing on the basis that the election was stolen, blah, 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 blah. And this is, you know, let's just remember we're in a Western civilization. He's a rational human being. he's the leader of the free world, so-called, and yet what he's calling for is what he called for was an angry mob. Yeah,
it was a
coup. To go down to the capital and prevent them taking the election from him because he was aggrieved at losing. And then he didn't, when people were being killed, people were being injured, hundreds of thousands of people were fighting the security forces and they were armed.
Yeah.
And they were stomping on them and bringing about life-changing injuries, and he did nothing. It's not like he couldn't do that. He's the fucking president. So he could have gone, oh, yeah, we're going to need a lot more security down there. Or he could just step down to the press room and stand in front of a camera.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. At any point. And
that
was the thing.
You idiots.
For over 3 hours, he...
Yeah.
He... The only things he did were make it worse. He didn't do anything to try to improve the situation. And he even was reluctant about the stuff that he did eventually.
Yeah.
When he did send a tweet, Sarah Matthews said that she talked to Kelly McEnany, the White House press secretary, about what was going to be in the tweet that, that Trump was going to send to say, you know, was it the tweet? Did he send the tweet? I can't remember if he sent the video first or the tweet first, but Kayleigh McEnany said to Sarah Matthews, he does not want to include any sort of mention of peace in the tweet.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to tell them to be peaceful. And it wasn't until Ivanka suggested tell them to stay peaceful, suggesting that they were being
they
peaceful.
They already been peaceful.
That he was like, okay, yeah, well, let's do that.
Yeah.
They talked about, again, not just the fact that Trump was doing nothing, but the specific things he wasn't doing.
He didn't
call the vice president. He didn't call anyone in the military. He didn't call anyone in federal law enforcement. He didn't call anyone in DC government. The people he called were senators.
Saying, keep objecting.
To fight his case.
Yeah.
To get them to fight for him, not to... He wasn't calling them to see if they were okay.
No.
Or, you know, to make sure they... He didn't call Kevin McCarthy to make sure he was safe. He called him to tell him, looks like these people care more about the election than you do.
Yeah. In response to McCarthy going, there are people getting murdered here. They're more angry
they're
about it than
us.
You
they're
are.
They're in my office. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was he was scared, they said again, I think. Kushner said that McCarthy was scared.
Yeah.
And brilliantly, they juxtaposed Josh Hawley's defiant fist that he he raised at the protesters as he was walking past in the morning or earlier on in the day.
Yeah.
With his running like a bitch away from the scary protesters once they were in the building.
I loved your Scooby-Doo running across the corridor bit.
I did.
So good.
Spend a little bit too much time rotoscoping Josh Hawley out from the original footage and inserting him in a Scooby-Doo cartoon.
Putting massive travelling mats around him. Yeah.
Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, that's absolutely on the that's on the Twitter account at Fallacious Trump.
Yeah. Check it out. It's brilliant. Yeah. Yeah.
And on our Facebook at facebook.com/groups/FallaciousTrump.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, all I can say to that is
I mean, it was just the first thing I thought of when I saw that.
Yeah,
when I saw, you know,
exactly.
It's kind of running in between the doors, in the corridors and stuff.
Yes, exactly, But also, I had the sound in my head when I saw it was Fred Flintstone on his toes about to bowl a ball down the alley. Yeah, that kind of ding, 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 ding.
Hawley, incidentally, is about to release a book, I think this month or next month, called Manhood, about the virtues of masculinity, about, you know, what it means to be a real man.
Yeah.
Which might be on
We've
the
got
slightly.
To get. We've got to read that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. We probably do, don't we? Yeah.
Sounded like Rigsby from Rising Down.
Oh, Mrs. Jones. Yes. But I mean, it is undercut slightly by him running and screaming like a little girl.
Yeah.
Away. I mean, the screaming I'm imagining. It wasn't on the video, but it's implied.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely there. Yeah.
And they didn't, I mean, they really, it didn't add anything evidentially to the hearing. They didn't really need to include that bit.
No.
It was just, look at this cunt.
Yes.
That was, that's right. Yeah. That was basically the entire purpose of it.
I think it was a moment of, oh, actually, we could show that and nobody's going to stop us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we also got acknowledgement that they had other sources who had corroborated what Cassidy Hutchinson had said about Trump attacking a Secret Service agent and desperately wanting to go down to the Capitol. They also had some behind-the-scenes footage of Trump preparing his video message the following day on January 7th.
Yeah. But there's also the one of them of him saying something on January 6th where he kind of went, you know, go home now. But there were two. There was the behind the scenes of him saying, well, I don't want to say that the election was over.
Yeah.
And that's the seventh one. He kind of, January 7th. What? And he just kind of went, no, let's just leave that out.
Yeah, no, that's too much. Not going to go that far.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, they've ratified the results and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, he didn't want to say that they would kind of have legal consequences, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't want to say the word yesterday.
Yeah.
Because yesterday is hard for him
say. Because it's more syllables than he's used to. Yeah, yeah.
He
really did kind of choke this bit like... it's a bit like the Fonz trying to say sorry. It was that kind
He's just really bad at reading and talking.
Yeah, but also saying things like vote. You know, the vote's over now. Oh, no, I can't say that. Can't say that.
Yeah,
Worse than Gerald Ford. Mm. At least Gerald Ford could read and speak at the same time. Might not be able to speak and walk and chew gum, but he could read and speak. Whereas Trump can neither read nor speak.
No. And that's the thing. It's not surprising because we see him doing it in rallies and things.
Mm.
And he doesn't get through a whole sentence.
No.
Without going off script or going... Or
pretending that he meant to say Covey-fee. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Messing up and then pretending he hasn't messed up.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising, but it shows what the process is to get him to seem coherent on camera.
Yeah.
To get a few lines where he's said words in the right order.
To express some sort of humility or some sort of... in the face of the enormity of what's gone on, to express that he has some power over what's happening.
So that even an attempt at that came across. I don't feel like what we saw suggested that's something he was going for.
No, well, but absolutely, he was absolutely not going for it because on the January 6th one, where they kind of went, enough's enough. Just fucking say something. Tell him to stop now.
Yeah.
And they wrote all these things about, you know, it's game over.
Yeah.
Go home. You've caused enough trouble. Just fuck off from where you came from. It's that kind of, so they could distance himself from it. And he just went off script.
Yeah, I'm not going to say any of that.
Yep. We love you. Off you go. Thanks very much.
This is what happens. He said, this is what happens when an election is stolen. Yeah.
Yeah. And you think, oh my God, this man is in charge of the country.
And the thing is, I mean, we've both filmed people, I'm sure. I certainly have.
Yeah.
Who cannot get through a sentence
Yeah.
without messing up or forgetting what they were going to say or anything like that. And it is, yeah. I mean, Christ, if the people who film in the White House are, I presume they're on staff. I presume they're not just freelancers who, you know, they get in a different person. So whoever had that job during the Trump administration, Christ, good luck to them. Well done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No wonder they were for emotionally surviving. Drained.
I don't know. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's hard when you get one person. And I've had situations where usually the first thing they ask is, can I tape up a piece of paper to the camera that says what I'm going to say?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
you're like, okay, first of all, we have a teleprompter. Second, no.
Yes, yes, exactly.
It'll look shit.
Yeah.
It's better if you just kind of...
We know what you're going to say, just say what you're going to say.
Almost everything I've ever filmed, the person I'm filming is talking about their thing that they're an expert
the
in.
The stuff that they
the
know.
The company they own, the you know, the industry that they are trying to proselytize for, whatever it is, that they
the stuff
supposedly
they're passionate about.
Are knowledgeable and passionate about.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the thing I try and tell people is just, you know, have a sense of what you want to say, but talk from the heart. Talk, say what you feel.
And I will prompt you.
In most cases,
I'll
ask questions
and
we'll cut those out.
Yeah.
And in most cases, it works brilliantly. And just every now and again, you get someone who is utterly terrible
at
talking.
just talking. Yeah. And you think, what must they be like in normal conversations with potential partners, clients, donors? You know, you think, how's your business that you're the leader of?
Yeah.
Succeeded thus far. If
how has it got
the
to the point where you have enough money to have a video?
That's right. And perhaps what we should be doing is employing the business people, the people that generate the partnerships. Let's go talk to them, because obviously you're shit at it, and that's why you that's why you created a partnerships department.
That's kind of largely. Covers, I think, what they talked about, and then they mentioned that their work is continuing.
Yeah,
they are doing more information gathering and conducting more interviews, subpoenaing and speaking to more people. One of the things that they're going to be getting, I suspect, over the course of the next 2 months before or month and a half before the hearings start up again, might be Alex Jones's phone records. Because we will be talking in a future episode about Alex Jones's defamation hearing that is currently undergoing, because it is amazing. It is outstanding what is happening. And one of the things that's happened this week in that, just in the last couple of days, is that the plaintiff's lawyers have revealed that Alex Jones's lawyers, almost 2 weeks ago, accidentally sent them his entire phone records.
Wow.
For the last, like, 2 years.
Wow.
Unbidden. Like, all of his calls and text messages and everything, that like a copy of his phone, basically.
Yeah.
And that is now something they have and are using to impeach stuff that he has said on the stand and prove that he is committing perjury.
Fantastic.
And once the January 6th committee heard that an actual lawyer has this...
Yeah.
They were like, "Oh, when you're done with that, can we get a look
at it?" Yeah,
because he has probably interacted with quite a few right wing people around January 6th ish.
Yeah.
So it would be quite useful to hear what they're saying and find out what kind of text messages they've sent Alex Jones. So so that's probably going to be one of the things that comes up in September.
More expensive than the $4 million he's just paid out. Yeah, to the Sandy Hook. People.
I mean, it's going to be, it's going to be, it's going to be more than that, I think.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I mean, he's tried to claim that he has no money and that InfoWars is a lot less lucrative than it in fact is.
Yeah.
And
he's got the same accountants as Trump.
His lawyers are so bad.
Courses in Scotland. Yeah.
I think he's got some of the same lawyers as Trump, because they're terrible. terrible. They're really just genuinely incompetent. And to the extent where a lot of the commentary online has been from people saying, are they being deliberately bad so that they can claim, like, he can appeal based on incompetent lawyers or something? But this is a civil case, and that isn't a thing you can do.
Yeah,
which still doesn't necessarily rule it out, because they might not know that. But but they're really, we're going to talk about it. We'll talk about it in more detail on another episode.
We can't prevent ourselves. Yeah.
And finally, some things we really don't have time to talk about.
We finally got the news we've been waiting for last week when the DOJ confirmed that they are investigating Trump in their criminal probe of the January 6th attack on the Capitol. And Merrick Garland made it very clear that they do not consider anyone to be outside the scope of prosecution, even if they did used to be president. So far, the impaneled federal grand jury has heard testimony from Cassidy Hutchinson and Mike Pence's aides, Greg Jacobs and Mark Short. And this week we hear that White House lawyers Pat Cipollone and Patrick Philbin have also been subpoenaed, which is, as January 6th committee member Adam Kinzinger put it, probably bad for former President Trump.
Probably bad.
Back in November 2020, when Trump lost the election, quite a few people were asking us, what's going to happen to the podcast now? Since, with Trump out of office, we surely would run out of things to talk about. Well, I don't think we're going anywhere just yet.
Nope. We're going to be busier than ever. Clapton, Banner, Morecambe, Idol, or even the original Marty McFly, Stoltz. We can all get a bit lazy when bothering to distinguish one Eric from another, especially when you don't know your guitarist from your surreal comedians or someone you wouldn't like when they're angry. Nuns, more seemingly ignorant, or perhaps just plain lower than a snake's belly cunning than Trump, of course, who happily endorsed Eric in Missouri's GOP Senate primary. No other name, just Eric.
I trust the great people of Missouri on this one to make up their own minds, much as they did when they gave me landslide victories in the 2016 and 2020 elections, and I am therefore proud to announce that Eric has my complete and total endorsement.
I guess when you're too busy making it about yourself, you can easily overlook that both the male Republican candidates are called Eric. Of course, each of them wasted no time in claiming it was them who Trump had anointed in his name, not unlike in that scene with Idol in Life of Brian when the followers fight over the dropped gourd and the sandal, each claiming that they're the chosen ones. A war of words has broken out between the Erics, Greitens and Schmidt. Schmidt's a rhino, according to Greitens, and Greitens is a sex scandaler with his hairdresser, according to both the Republicans and the Democrats. Meanwhile, Missouri Republican Vicky Hartzler, who is ahead of Eric but behind Eric, jokingly congratulated Eric McIlroy, a much lesser-known GOP Senate candidate in Missouri. As a side note, Josh Hawley, not an Eric but a runner, is apparently endorsing Hartzler's running as well.
I believe it is that race in which Ron Watkins was also running, who got, I think, 3% of the vote.
Yeah, Kevin Phillips Bong, you scored no votes at all. Not a sausage, bugger all. Yeah. Oh, and Ron would actually sing in a very operatic voice, climb every mountain.
As red states go, Kansas is right up there. They voted 56-41 for Trump in 2020, and the last time they voted for a Democrat was 1964. So it's quite a big fucking deal that a ballot measure in this week's Kansas primaries, which would have allowed the state legislature to outlaw abortion, failed dramatically, with over 60% of Kansans voting pro-choice. Seemingly aware that they're wrong and everyone hates them, the pro-forced birth lobby tried to trick people into voting their way with a text message campaign advising people to vote yes to the ballot measure if they wanted to, quote, give women a choice, when a yes vote would actually have removed the right to an abortion from the state constitution. The texts were anonymous, so can't conclusively be tied to former Kansas Congressman Tim Huelskamp, whose political action committee is the only major group campaigning in favour of the amendment. But when the Kansas City Star called him up to ask about it, he aborted the call rather than facing the consequences of his decision. And in case you're still fuzzy about which partner forced birth laws are designed to punish, check out GOP West Virginia House of Delegates member Chris Pritt, who argued last week that expecting dads to pay child support is a bad thing because it will inevitably lead them to pressure their partners to get more abortions. So the best way to solve that problem is clearly to still force people to have babies, but remove the requirement for financial support after the birth.
Okay, Jim. Cue the laugh track. We're about to talk about Republican claims of voter fraud in 2020 again. And that can only mean one thing. Howls of derisive laughter. Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich has been investigating more than 200 cases raised by cyber ninjas. Yep, that crack outfit of digital warriors who alerted authorities to so many instances of votes being cast in the name of apparently dead voters. Brnovich's review states that of the 409 cases brought, many were very surprised to learn that they were allegedly deceased. He found that there were only a handful of potential cases, and Brnovich called some of the claims so absurd that the names and birth dates didn't even match the deceased. And of the handful, only one could be linked to a dead voter. And even then, the dead person's ballot was not counted toward the results of the 2020 election, and a spokesperson for Brnovich indicated that the facts of the case did not support prosecution of the individual who cast the vote. Just to remind you, and cue the next laugh, in Maricopa County, Cyber Ninja's review found that Biden not only won the election, but that Trump's margin had been overcounted by 261 votes. And we still don't know whether they're still paying $50,000 in daily fines after failing to comply with an order to provide audit materials to an Arizona newspaper since January. No, stop now. It's starting to hurt.
If neither the name nor the date of birth matched the deceased, How was it linked to the deceased?
How would they
person?
Even say? Exactly. Well, that's because cyber ninjas are experts and are being paid a lot of money. So you just go, oh, yeah, well, this is dead person called Adam Smith, who died in 1875.
And again, yeah, but the vote was someone else and a different thought, birthday. Yeah,
and a different time.
Weird.
Yeah. But there are 409 of them, so the fact that we've reported that many cases.
Never mind the fact it's bullshit. Look at how many there are.
There are, Never mind the quality, feel the width. Yeah.
Joe Manchin is an arsehole. A rich, capricious, fossil fuel-funded, houseboat-owning, spotlight-hogging, vote-blocking, contrary arsehole. But he's our arsehole. And very occasionally, having him instead of an actual Republican in the West Virginia Senate seat pays off. After he blocked the Democrats' ambitious Build Back Better plan, because, as I mentioned, he's an asshole, he made it very clear to Chelonian Senate leader Mitch McConnell that there was no longer any hope for a reconciliation bill which would benefit the Democrats and, technically, anyone who enjoys having a livable climate. As part of an agreement that saving the planet was definitely off the table, McConnell allowed 17 Republicans to sign on to an unambiguously good bill called the CHIPS Act, which sadly has nothing to do with getting John and Ponch back on TV, but in fact builds up US computer chip manufacturing infrastructure, increasing technological competitiveness with China. Literally minutes after the CHIPS Act passed the Senate, Joe Manchin and Chuck Schumer announced the Inflation Reduction Act, which doesn't do all that much to reduce inflation, but is, as it turns out, a budget reconciliation bill that includes almost $370 billion of climate spending, which is designed to reduce pollution by 40% by 2030, as well as $64 billion aimed at lowering healthcare costs. Honestly, it's not great that you have to trick Republicans into letting you do the bare minimum towards fixing the climate crisis and healthcare, like putting your dog's medicine in a block of cheese, but at least they're stupid enough to fall for it.
On July 25th, West Michigan's WWMT-TV News Channel 3 was apparently testing the on-screen graphics generator, and gosh darn it, the numbers got broadcast ahead of the actual results of the Michigan's GOP primary race for governor. insert facepalm emoji here, because in the alternate universe of Republicans in elections, once you put numbers up and then more numbers arrive that are actually the verified results overseen by actual electoral officials rather than a television journalistic outlet who report the stuff, not run it, you're in for trouble. So Nat Ryan Kelly, who lost by 25 percentage points, and Michigan Senate candidate Mike Detmer, who lost by 16 percentage points, are contesting the results. Something about it's been stolen in the worst perversion of Democratic blah, 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 yeah, 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 yeah. Bear in mind, these people lost to other Republican candidates who won the seats. So what's the beef? It seems this particular stolen election stance is getting a bit tired, or perhaps it's really something Kelly at least should be getting therapy for. After all, he was arrested on June 9th on misdemeanor charges that he committed crimes during the January 6th attempted insurrection in Washington, D.C. He has pleaded not guilty. Duh.
I feel like if I was a politician protesting my innocence of a crime I'd been accused of committing, like, say, stealing a car, and I was asked to vote on a bill that was designed to combat car theft, I'd take it as an opportunity to show just how very against car theft I am. I'd make a big deal about how car theft is really bad, and I'm happy to do everything I can to help stamp it out. That's not the way Congressman Matt Gaetz decided to go. Instead, he voted against the renewal of a sex trafficking bill, for reasons known only to him, his friend and cooperating witness Joel Greenberg, and an unknown number of underage women. Gaetz has also been an unwitting helper in the fight for abortion rights this month, following his low-rent stand-up routine at Turning Point USA's Student Action Summit, where he said, "Why is it that the women with the least likelihood of getting pregnant are the ones most worried about having abortions? Nobody wants to impregnate you if you look like a thumb." Attacking people based on looks is a bold move for someone with an actual five head. And Houston-based abortion rights activist Olivia Giuliana owned Gaetz in a brief Twitter fight about his comments, which went viral enough that she helped to raise over $2 million for abortion rights across the country in less than a week.
In a depressing suspension of life as we know it, ginger spice hugging the Dean Dorries, fuel price rises, heat strikes, inflation, lending rate, profits for shareholders, overpay for workers, are not being addressed by the government except in some perverse game of anything you can ignore and lie about, I can do better, being played by the prospective leaders of the Conservative Party. Outside observers, and we're all pretty much outside observers in this competition, would be forgiven that this was a general election, given the amount of media airtime the bickering and infighting is getting, whilst only 0.3% of the population, that is the 160,000 strong Conservative Party membership, can actually take part in what is becoming a malformed rerun of the 2019 election, when Corbyn's Labour Party were promising more and more outrageous things with each passing week, if only you'd vote for them. Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak are promising an increasing array of severe cuts, restrictions, privations and curbs on rights, wages and services in order to appeal to rooms barely filled with middle-aged, middle-class, grey-beard, white-faced, blue-rinse, blood vessel busting curmudgeons that in reality would have neither a woman and certainly not an Asian running their little England. Apparently, whilst in France, I can sign up to Conservatives Abroad in order to vote. I wonder how the Labour Party membership registrar will feel about that.
So that's all the bad arguments and faulty reasoning we have time for this week. You'll find the show notes at fallacioustrump.com. And if you hear Trump say something stupid and want to ask if it's a fallacy, our contact details are on the contact page.
If you think we've used a fallacy ourselves, let us know. And if you've had a good time, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Or simply tell one other person in person about how much they'd like our podcast. And you can support the show at patreon.com/ftrump, just like our straw man level patrons Steve Bickle, Schmutz, Mark Reike and Amber R. Buchanan, and our true Scotsman level patrons Kaz Tui, Andrew Houck, Max Beaver, and our top patron Lauren. Thank you so much, everybody, for your patronage. It's really very much appreciated.
You can connect with those awesome people as well as us and other listeners in the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/fallacioustrump.
All music is by The Outbursts and was used with permission. So until next time on Fallacious Trump, we'll leave the last word to the Donald.
That's right. Go home to mommy. Bye. Bye.
Baby Spice would never have hugged Nadine Dorries. Never liked Ginger.
Never liked it. No, see, I'm not sure about. No. I could say the same about Posh Spice. I think she probably. I think she's.
Oh yeah, she totally
definitely
would.
A Tory. Yeah. Yeah. Baby Spice. Yeah. Baby Spice. You say yeah. She
was the best.
Yeah. No, it's Posh Spice. Hold on. Scary.
What?
Scary. Forget it. It's always Posh Spice.
Posh Spice, really?
Baby Spice.
On what basis?
Posh Spice. I don't know. Black hair. I don't know. David Beckham. I don't know.
Too pointy, Posh Spice.
True.
Very pointy.
Very pointy.
All elbow.
All elbow. All elbow and chin. Yeah. Uh-huh. I'll grant you that, yeah. Whereas Ginger, these days, a lot of elbow and chin. Those days, just quite, what would you say, voluptuous? Yeah.
I wouldn't say voluptuous because that's not a word, but yeah.
Well, it's a portmanteau word, isn't it? Is that voluptuous and lumpy. Yeah. I think she was voluptuous. Yeah.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.